Heritage Radio Network. That music that you just heard is by way of our friend Paul Watling at supercompuglobal.com. And you are on the internet, and we are broadcasting from two shipping containers next to Roberta's Pizza, which is 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn. The show is engineered by Nat Wiener and produced by Jack Inslee. Today's sponsor is Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
We're with Groundworks, Inc. We design and install and maintain gardens. We're located in Brooklyn, New York. And our show aims to bring culture to horticulture. You can join our Facebook page, Groundworks, Inc. We Dig Plants. Or you can have a take a look at our website, groundworksgardens.com, to learn about what we do. But on this show today, we're going to talk about plant hunting or a horticultural trip around the world. In the winter, there's not a lot of gardening to be done in New York City, so gardeners turn to their books. And I'm going to begin by talking about a plant hunter that I'm that sort of introduced me to the subject. His name is Ernest Henry Wilson. There's a lily that I grow in my garden, not just for its beauty, but in homage to Mr. Wilson. He's the reason that I became obsessed with the subject. Now, we've all studied explorers in school, Columbus, Magellan, the conquistadors, but most of us haven't studied botanical explorers. These are the men and women, the occasional woman, whose dangerous work we often reap the benefit of. So have you all considered how many plants in our North American gardens came from places very far away? Not just the tropicals, but the deciduous and the shrubs and the evergreens and trees. So someone had to go looking for them, mm-hmm. and that's what these folks did.
Like, how did they get their name and stuff?
Exactly. So the subject is vast, and I can't even begin to touch the tip of the iceberg in 10 minutes. So I'm going to take a very personal journey through the subject, and I'm going to provide a selected reading list on our Facebook page for those of you who want to find out more. Now, how did I find E.H. Wilson? Well, I was in the library of the Horticultural Society of New York many years ago, and I found a children's book about E.H. Wilson, or Chinese Wilson, as he liked to be called. And that book was about his explorations in China. And I was smitten. I fell in love with him.
So and what year was this?
What year did was like, Wilson exploring?
Wilson, yeah.
He was exploring at the beginning of the 20th century, 1905.
Okay.
He was an Englishman, and he was sent by Veitch's Nursery to go hunting
in
China. Mm-hmm. So he was sent on a very specific, with a specific objective, to go find the Davidia involucrata, mm-hmm. or the handkerchief tree.
Right, that's that white, like, beautiful, very ethereal
named after
flower.
A missionary, Pierre David, who had originally found it, but then they wanted to find it again. So they sent him. He was a very young man, as most of these plant hunters were. He was in his 20s. He was paid very little. He just did it for the love of it and the adventure, which it was. So he risked life and limb to get this lily that I can now order from any good mail order nursery in the United States. It's the Lilium Regal, or the Regal Lily. It's a trumpet lily, a white, fragrant trumpet lily that's about 4 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
So while he was hunting for this lily, he was on this mountain pass with his mule train and his porters, and he decided to ignore the characters on the rock. There was carving, Chinese characters, warning of avalanche.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided to ignore that. He continued, and an avalanche did occur. Rocks fell onto his legs and broke his legs in many places. So to complicate the matter, while he was immobilized, another mule train caught up with them, and they couldn't turn around at all.
Right.
So what did Wilson do? He laid across the path, and he allowed 50 mules to walk across him.
Yikes.
Yeah. So then he improvised a splint for his leg with his camera tripod, and then he was carried for 3 days to a mission hospital. And he survived, but of course his leg wasn't set entirely properly, so he has that limp. So every time I see that lily in the garden, I think about Wilson and what he had to do to get it.
Yeah, we use that lily in all of our gardens.
It's a great plant.
Yeah.
But of course, rarity is relative.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 18th century, America was still, lots of America was still very wild. And our native plants were considered rare for European gardeners. They coveted them. They wanted our native species. So there was an American plant hunter and nurseryman named John Bartram, who I was also very fascinated with.
Right. That's Bartram's garden.
Right. Outside of Philadelphia.
Right.
Yeah. It still exists. You can still visit it. And he was kind of crazy, too. Like a lot of them were. They were so in love with plants that they took many, many risks. And
he was friends with Jefferson, right? And
yeah,
Ben Franklin.
Yeah, he sold plants to them, not only to European, he shipped seeds and plants overseas to Europe, but he also sold to American collectors who could afford it. So he was kind of wacky too. I thought of him as practicing plant hunting as extreme sport. Now, this is the man.
X Games.
Yeah, this is a man who. At that time, the average life expectancy in the 18th century in America was about 50, right? Mm-hmm. In his mid-50s, he continued to botanize and to collect plants. So one time, he crossed New Jersey when there was 2 feet of snow on the ground. In a driving rain, climbed a tree to get a particular seed for a pine that an English customer wanted.
No, that's dedication.
Yeah, that's plant love. So there's many more, you know, that I'm not going to touch upon today.
In these reading, are like tweed wearing,
yeah,
like mm-hmm. you know, packing your specimens into like paper, you know, like envelopes and
yeah, and they weren't comfortable. They didn't live comfortable lives. Their travels were far from comfortable. They didn't have Patagonia clothing. So in reading about these dead plant lovers, I asked myself, why am I fascinated with them? What makes them so interesting to me? Why aren't more people interested in them? And I came to the conclusion that I envied their time when science was a new discipline and the world had many more places left to discover. And getting a new plant, the new fern species and exhibiting under glass was exciting as getting a new app or a new smartphone. So, you know, I can't go back in time. I'm afraid of flying and heights, so I have to armchair travel.
Yeah, plants are good for that.
Exactly. And luckily, there are still plant hunters that do that today, and it hasn't stopped. And Alice is going to share about Dan Hinckley,
yes,
a great nurseryman and one of today's great plant explorers. He's still going to China, the mother of gardens, and he isn't afraid to travel and to go near and far to try to find new plants.
Right. And when we come back from the break, I'll be talking more about him. He is kind of everybody's inspiration.
Thanks.
Dig Plants. We're hosting out of a shipping container next to Roberta's Pizza, and today's show is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. I'm going to talk about a contemporary plant hunter named Dan Hinckley, and if you have ever had the chance to listen to Dan Hinckley speak, you absolutely have to do this. He is phenomenal. He's fun and adventurous, and he's a true plant lover. A little bit about him is that he got started studying botany and then opened up a grand nursery in Washington State called Heronswood. Now, Heronswood is no longer in operation. That's a whole other story and a whole other discussion. His new initiative is called Windcliff. And it is a garden that has become, as did Heronswood, a depository of all the species that he collects. So he leads annual trips to China and Brazil, to the rainforest, to Central America, Malaysia, Taiwan. He's always searching for new varieties of plants that we are familiar with. For instance, he's on the hunt for the hydrangea that we all love so much, but he's looking for one that is perhaps fragrant. So he travels far and wide up, you know, tremendous cliffs looking for such plants.
But he might be wearing Patagonia clothing.
He's definitely wearing Patagonia clothing, and he is Twittering, and yes. You know,
he's got a blog.
Yeah, he's got a blog.
And actually, Wilson had no blog.
And his blog is actually great. It's danhinckley.com, and I invite you to check it out because you can read along with his adventures. So I actually have a fun excerpt from his blog that is really great descriptive writing, and this is kind of what his lectures are about. They kind of follow along the same trajectory. So it reads as, Vietnam has been, again, exceptional with territories and plants that had thus far remained unapparent. On our first trek, foot by foot, lucid days and idyllic breezes, and at nights, skies of galactic infernos, taking us through hummocks of Hydrangea chinensis, as well as what I refer to as Hydrangea indochinensis. That's like bad pun. The latter has become a holy grail of sorts to finally have firmly established in cultivation. In this matter, it has been stubborn. It is an evergreen species with linear leaves to 5 inches undersurfaced, with a heart-rendering pigment of over-ripened plum.
He sounds like a poet, too.
Yes. That's what's really fun about him. So he got started in Michigan State as a student in the early 70s, and then he has a master's in horticulture from the University of Washington in 1983 is when he graduated. And then he started Heronswood Nursery, and he, you know, now has Windcliff, his second nursery. So he just came out with a new book this past summer. It's the second in a series, and it's called The Explorer's Garden, Shrubs and Vines from the Four Corners of the World. And it's great because the picture on the cover of the book is like Dan on a mountaintop with like Tibetan flags, and he's there, and like the wind is whipping him. And
Dan, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on the show.
Yes. Yeah. So please call us. He's just fantastic. In fact, he just now is starting to work with Monrovia Nurseries. He's creating the Dan Hinckley collection. He has 7 exclusive plants with them so far, and 7 semi-exclusive varieties.
Are they going to be available this spring, you think? Or
yeah.
What's the status?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, there's one that is one of my favorite ones. It's a flowering maple, a abutilon, and it's one that we use in our gardens. It's called Cascade Dawn, and it's a light-colored peachy red flower, very, very delicate, with maple leaf-shaped foliage. And
right.
It's amazing because it gets 6 to 8 feet tall, and it's winter hardy, frost proof.
That's amazing because it's important to note that the abutilons, even though they're maples, look nothing like maples. They're not
right.
Trees.
Right.
And
it's a tropical.
Yeah, it is. We use it as annuals. They make a great focal point in people's gardens
right.
For the summer and fall.
Right.
And if you have space to bring them in and overwinter them, you can. They can drop all their leaves and then come back and regenerate themselves in the spring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he also does some design work. He worked with the public, wonderful landscape architect, Catherine Gustafson. He did a job with her at the Smithsonian Institute. And he did Martha Stewart's personal home. And I can imagine what that was like.
Yeah. Well, Martha can only hire the very best.
Yes, because
right?
Of course she wants the very best. And then he's worked on the University of Washington campus, and then, of course, Windcliff. And Windcliff is a very different nursery than Heronswood because it's more about the vista. It's more about the open sky. It's not such a museum
as
Heronswood was.
Is it on the coast? Is it right on the water?
I believe
more so
because there's big kind of picturesque, you know, visions of the water. And additionally, he has done some work with PBS. He worked on their Nova series in 2007. And of course, he's been with Martha Stewart from 1996 until 2007. Of course, he's done some writing. He did an article for Garden Design magazine. Ann Raver from the New York Times has written several things about him. And then I think this wraps up Dan Hinckley. Verlin Klinkenborg, the writer, wrote a great article in the New York Times magazine, and he titled it "The Perfect Madness of Plants," and that was in 1999. So read his travel blog, danhinckley.com, and take a little trip with him and read about exotic places, because it's January and that's what gardeners have to do. So we're going to take a break in a second, and we're going to come back, and Carmen and I are going to talk about some seed catalogs that we love to travel with and learn about. We're going to talk about several of our favorite seed catalogs. So, see you soon. Is it gonna be some money?
Hi, we're back. You're listening to We Dig Plants at Heritage Radio Network. We're sponsored by Whole Foods Market. That was, of course, Sowing the Seeds of Love by Tears for Fears.
So 80s.
Yes. And today we were talking about plant hunting, a horticultural trip around the world, and seed and plant collecting. Now it's winter, as Alice said. All of the gardeners have their mailboxes stuffed with seed and plant catalogs. Now, some people are into shoes.
Right.
We are plant nerds, and we're into plants and seeds. So I know that my mailbox is stuffed every January. Right after Christmas, they arrive like clockwork.
Mm-hmm.
And Alice and I are going to talk about some of the ones that are worth purchasing from and that we like and that have long and illustrious histories. Alice, do you want to begin?
Sure. I think one of my favorite ones, because, of course, this is Heritage Radio Network, we have to talk about Seed Savers Exchange, which was founded in 1975. It's a nonprofit. It's a membership organization for seed sharing. They have, since their opening, distributed over 1 million seeds. It got started with a morning glory, the lowly morning glory.
Which I hate.
Oh, I like it. It's it got started with those two seeds. It was a morning glory and a pink tomato that actually immigrated with their owners in the 1870s from Bavaria.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in Iowa. That's where Seed Savers Exchange is located, in Iowa. They have about 900 acres. It's non-governmental seed bank. So, and they have over 25,000 vegetable varieties. So these are seeds that grandmothers and generations have collected.
And they're open pollinated varieties, right?
Exactly.
They're not hybrids. They're not owned by anyone.
Monsanto
right?
has no fingers in this pot.
So being that they're open pollinated, they can, they're not sterile. They're not hybrids.
They right.
can, so the if the gardener buys seeds from them, they can then save the seeds from the plant and
exactly.
and plant them again, and they'll...
Exactly. In right. fact, one of the initiatives of Seed Savers Exchange is they are contributing to the Svalbard Global Seed Vault in Norway, which is actually like kind of a doomsday vault, which started last February. And It is, you know, to just make sure that there is a collection of seeds
For the future.
For the future, exactly. In case of natural disaster or war.
And it's not owned by any nation then, right?
No, it's a collective.
So they can be shared worldwide
exactly.
if there's massive crop failure. Or,
exactly. Okay. Now, just two of my favorite things, because, of course, we have to talk about the plants, is, and I'm dying to use this in one of our gardens, it's Japonica striped maize, which is an ornamental corn from Japan. It was originally brought here in the United States in 1890, and it's a striped rainbow leaf that has dark purple tassels. It's completely organic, and you can buy 250 seeds for $12. So, and then another one of my favorites is, of course, pertaining to our last week's show and something that I love, is a red milkweed, which is a 5-foot-tall milkweed prairie plant that monarch butterflies, of course, love. And it's 50 seeds for $2.75. So
that's great.
Next catalog, Carmen?
Yeah, I'm going to share about Territorial Seed Company. They're one of my favorites. They're printed on newsprint, which I like. I don't go much for the big glossy ones. They also have lots of gardening supplies. Territorial Seed Company is from Cottage Grove, Oregon, and they have some special new things this year that I got excited about. One was this Piccolo Squash, which is a small squash, and they describe it as melt-in-your-mouth marrow squash with a unique new shape.
Marrow squash.
Yeah, and awesome. Also it says that they have smaller leaves, so it might be good for the, you know,
maybe an urban environment.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And then they also have what they are calling Territorial's Victory Garden. It's the perfect starter collection for self-reliant gardening, and includes... It's like a bucket with 27 vegetable seeds, herb seeds, and sunflower seeds in packages. And it's designed to make a household self-sufficient in terms of food.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And lastly from them, I'm a big fan. I grew up eating this, and I didn't really appreciate it much when I was a kid. But it's a roquette, which is a bitter green. And it's called, Latin name is Erica vesicaria, subspecies sativa. Mm-hmm. And it's a great, easy to grow green. So those are some of my favorites from their catalog. Mm-hmm. And they have a little bit of statistics from the USDA that I thought I'd share with the audience. It says here, polls conducted by the National Gardening Association indicate that 2 million more households grew vegetables in 2008 than in 2007. And 2009 results suggest a 20% increase in vegetable gardening as compared to 2008.
Yeah.
Another statistic from the USDA that they quote in their catalog says, in November of 2009, the USDA released a report that stated the nation's economic crisis catapulted the number of Americans who lack enough food to the highest level since the government has been keeping track. People living with some amount of food insecurity numbered nearly 50 million.
Yeah.
One child in four struggled last year to get enough nutritious food to eat. Many skip meals or eat too little.
Yeah.
So people are hungry.
And they're so connected, or disconnected, I should say, from where their food comes from and how to garden. I mean, it used to be that everybody had a little garden, but now with such
cheap food
and also the growth of cities, people are removed from it.
But you know, we're in Bushwick, Brooklyn right now. There's a lot of open space.
Yeah.
And people can be growing things,
right? Well, and what I really want our listeners to know is we're, you know, in two shipping containers next to an amazing pizza restaurant, Roberta's, and on top of the restaurant is a garden.
Yes.
And the garden provides food for the restaurant. So
yeah,
it's a great initiative. So back to like an ornamental garden, I have to say I love one of my favorite catalogs this time of year is the David Austin catalog. The photos are so dreamy and luscious.
Those are roses, right?
Roses, I'm sorry, yeah. These are English roses, and they're hybridized with American species. So the colors are just gorgeous. And if you like pinks and you like big cabbage roses, this makes me drool.
So this isn't the tea rose, like the pointy florist tea rose.
This is not your grandmother's
blousy, you know.
Right. This is not your grandmother's tea rose where you get three roses and then it's over. These are like, they bloom all summer long. They're big and fleshy, and the colors are unbelievable.
And importantly, they're fragrant, some of them, right? They're grown for fragrance because they've bred fragrance out of roses many times.
Yeah. So anyway, David Austin is a great, fun catalog for voyeurism. Rose voyeurism.
Okay. Well, what I get voyeuristic about is fruits.
Yeah.
As you could tell from the last show about figs. And one of my favorite catalogs is Edible Landscaping from Afton, Virginia. They have a huge assortment of different fruits. They have a dozen varieties of figs, as many varieties of blueberries, and some weird fruits that you might not have heard of, like edible dogwoods.
Mm-hmm.
The fruits of dogwoods, like the Cornelian cherry dogwood and the Cornus cusa, those are edible fruits. And you can eat that. They have mulberries. They have 12 kinds of kiwis. They even have a hardy kiwi, which I purchased for my parents, actually, and they planted. And it is a kiwi that you can eat the skin. We actually eat it's tiny, and we don't peel it. Mm-hmm. We eat the entire skin.
Mm-hmm. Now, the name of the nursery is Edible Landscapes, right?
Edible, as in E-D-I-B-L-E.
Okay.
And they have cranberries, strawberries, and I think also the...
Quince.
The owner is also a musician, so you can also get his CD on his website.
Ah.
He's a multi-talented individual. Yeah. So, and they have citrus as well. Mm-hmm. They have the blood orange, which you can never really find in the United States. And they have also some strange things. They have dragon fruit.
So they're not under, if they have citrus, they're not under the quarantine, I guess, because they're from Virginia?
Yes, that's right. They're from Virginia. Right now, I think there's a quarantine still in Florida. Florida cannot ship citrus because they're having some kind of problem.
Right. Okay. So I think that pretty much wraps up our seed catalog. Of course, there's tons more. So, and we can list some on our Facebook page. So let's talk for a quick second about some upcoming events, horticulture events in the city. On the 19th of January, at the Hort Society of New York, there is a book club that is started by our great friend Catherine Powis.
She's going to be on the show shortly.
Yeah, so you can go to hsny.org to learn some more information about that. And then on the 20th, Wave Hill, the Botanical Garden, is having Patrick Kalina, who's the Vice President of Operations and Horticulture for the High Line. He's speaking at the New York School of Interior Design, which is on 70th Street. So go to wavehill.org to figure that out. And I think that pretty much does it.
Well, we'd like to thank Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick again. You have to come and eat their amazing pizza. My favorite is the one with the mushrooms. And we'd like to thank Heritage Radio Network for this great program. The show is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener and sponsored this week by Whole Foods Market. You can go to an archive of the show at heritageradionetwork.com. Go to We Dig Plants. The next show is going to be Tropical Houseplants for Winter Escape. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the garden.
Happy gardening.